What's up, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in. So today I am super stoked to have author, booktuber, and all-around fantasy nerd Daniel B. Green join me today. And I want to give a big shout out to Matt at The Broken Binding for getting this all set up. But first of all, Daniel, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Surprisingly not as nervous for book two release as I was for book one. I have been for the lead up, but now that it's happening, I'm like, all right, I know this part of it. It's going to go and it'll be fine. Don't freak out. So I'm pretty good. I'm in a good headspace.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Yeah, I know there was a massive, you know, lead up to the debut novella that came back up, you know, out back in March. And, you know, you had quite like a massive, like, pre-order thing going. Like, I mean, you were hitting like tops of the charts and everything. It was pretty neat. So is it kind of got the same rhythm, like snowball effect going into book two?
That's the interesting thing. I don't get any of those stats until launch day, and this is day before. So I'm sitting here like, maybe. I really don't know.
So there is a little bit there that's like, you know,
yeah, it's one of the big disadvantages of self-pub. If you do traditional, they usually like can like, you know, get the inside scoop and be like, yeah, you're looking pretty good. But like for me now, like I can't reach out to my publisher because they don't care about me and they're not going to tell me what the pre-orders are looking like. So pre-order and the link's down below. No. But no, it's been really nice. I've had a few early reviews that have been really well received in terms of their criticism and praise. Like, I know I'm not the best author ever, so it's nice to have a well-rounded response. It's honestly kind of my favorite part about putting out a book is like I'm always on the review end, so now I got to be on the other and I get to be like, that is a weakness, good job.
Thank you so much for pointing that out.
Yeah
I want to get into that later because I'm curious, you know, what it's like being on the other side. Like, you know, you've been doing your reviewing and so forth and critiquing for years now. And it's got to be interesting being on the other side, but kind of want to start out. So, you know, clearly you're a pretty popular dude. And when people hear your name, you know, YouTube almost automatically comes to mind. But who exactly is Daniel B. Green outside of fantasy news?
Outside of fantasy news, I am a very weird nerd who spends way too much time yelling at a camera and reading books. But in general, I just try to present myself as honestly as I can on camera. Like, that's the realest, the more just genuine you are in YouTube, the more you're going to attract the right kind of audience. I say the right kind because you can be very fake and get a lot of people who like that, but I'm a spastic nerd. And so I think most people's assumptions about me in my personal life are probably right. I watch a lot of movies, I play some games, occasionally go out with friends, and I don't know, it's a pretty normal life. I'm not doing the Jake Paul stuff that a lot of people assume. There's this weird thing where if you're on YouTube, people either assume you're a millionaire or they assume you're broke. A lot of people don't realize like there is a strong, thriving, healthy middle class of content creators. And that's kind of where I nicely sit in. It's very enjoyable. It's not the drama, but it has the benefits of content creation.
I gotcha. So you're not sitting there like raking in millions and buying up all the Pokemon cards and wearing a Charizard like chain to a fight.
No, I sat down and tried to budget buying a new couch the other day. That's where I'm at. But I was budgeting for a nice couch. So like, you know, I can do that. That's my aggressive stance.
I hear you. Yeah, I do find it interesting because I feel like exactly what you said is people think there's just like you're making nothing or you're making everything. Depending on where you're at. But I mean, there are millions of people out there that are in that average that are just doing really well for themselves and just push out content. Now, you know, you're currently sitting at, you know, just under 59.5 million views with over 358,000 subscribers, which congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Did you ever imagine hearing, let alone seeing numbers like that when you first started your channel?
I was specifically told by some of the biggest booktubers at the beginning that I would never break 100K. And that was kind of part of my strategy to approaching booktube. We talked a little bit before the camera started rolling, but I just decided after looking at booktube and really loving a lot of the content creators in there, I was like, well, I want to stand out. So I'm just going to be book related, but not follow that formula. So I didn't do a lot of the standard booktube videos, even though I really liked them. And I just tried to be weird. And I found that if you make a big splash in a small pond, you'll get attention and then you'll get other people from outside that pond coming in to check it on out. And so now after a couple years, I made my first check for a couple of dollars. And then a few years after that, I actually got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm making enough money doing this where I can switch over to this full time. I did it a little too soon. So for anyone thinking like, oh, like I could jump into it as soon as I get one good check. One good check from YouTube does not mean an another immediate good check from YouTube. that was a hard lesson learned, but I luckily survived that. And then, you know, I'm someone who's always looking for another uphill challenge. I can't really rest on my laurels. I'm driven by anxiety and stress. And so after I got comfortable doing YouTube full time, I decided to step on over to making a book, and that's what I'm release day is today, I think, theoretically, if this comes out when we talked about. And so that's the next thing, just adding another layer of things to freak out about.
Yeah, it sounds like you're kind of going about it the wrong way though. Like, let me just add more stress and then maybe I'll feel good about it afterwards.
I want to, you know, die young and leave an incomplete legacy. That's the way
there you go. Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little off camera about, you know, the reason you started your YouTube channel was, you know, you wanted to find people to talk about fantasy books with. And I mean, that's a little bit why I started my blog, is because I'm sitting here in the middle of Alabama and I have nobody to talk to about fantasy books. Like, nobody down here, I would say nobody reads. That's a lie. Like, people read. Like, you see people on the beach reading, but like what they're reading is definitely not what I'm reading. And
really, there's not a lot of dark hardcore Robin Hobb fans in Alabama. I'm amazed. Sorry, I lived in Alabama for a while, so I got some beef with it.
yeah, there's definitely not. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I started the blog and why I've kind of built it up to what it is now, because I just find like-minded people who want to talk about books and who enjoy talking about books they loved, and sometimes you enjoy talking about books they didn't like so much. But it's nice to kind of have like a way to vent a little bit when you're not just like yelling at your cat, like, oh my gosh, this book is horrible. You know, cat could care less, yeah. You know, or, you know, like my wife, she doesn't give a rip about the books that I read. So, but she's like happy for me that like, I'm enjoying something, I guess. That's nice.
That's what's really important. As long as they nod along and go, yeah, good. I'm glad that you hated it. It's passionate. Yes. Good. Yeah. Let the hate flow through you. That's a good partner.
Yeah. I mean, same thing with like sports, like she could care less, but she's like, oh, the team, did they win? No. Oh, that's so sad.
Do you also have it because you're into books? A lot of people assume you have no interest in sports, because I'm a big MMA boxing guy. And every time I tell people that, they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a person who has interests outside of words. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if like the community aspect of it, like if they know that about me or not. I mean, I would assume they do, because I might still have it in my byline that like I'm an Auburn grad. So maybe like they're like, oh, maybe he likes football. Like I watch like all sports. Like that's really was my first love. That was going to be like my gig out of college. And that just, honestly, I fell out of love with it, like going to a couple of conventions and going, yeah, that's definitely not what I want to do. And so, yeah, then I just turned to books and I'm like, I haven't turned back, but hopefully people don't think I'm just this massive nerd that all I do is read and watch movies. And
that's 85% of my life, I'm gonna be honest, because I turned my work into that, so it's a good 8 hours every day. But no, it's fascinating. Like every time I get a gift now, it's always the content I talk about related, and there's moments where I'm like, you know, I like other things.
I do have other hobbies, and
haven't monetized those.
Yeah, right. Maybe you should just like have a whole like video that just goes, here are the other things that I like, and you might not get a whole lot of like views on it, because people are like, whatever, it's just do book stuff. But
right,
you know, there may be an opportunity there that you could like get some stuff slid in. You know, you're like, oh yeah, I really do love that. It's not book related. Awesome.
Well, that's actually, I kind of successfully did that a little bit, because I've started talking about the news of fantasy, which I love technology and, you know, entertainment stuff. And so I've been able to, through the scope of whatever, talk about tech. And so like one of my favorite stories I've ever covered on fantasy news was the new filming tech they used for The Mandalorian. Even though I didn't love that show as much as a lot of people, it was good. But I was more fascinated by the technology, because they weren't using green screens. They were using these massive dome screens. So the actors actually had the environments around them, which is just awesome to me. And it was a great excuse to get into that. And so it was just, I don't know. It's always fun to be able to take people's assumptions about you and use them to go in a different direction.
Yeah. Absolutely. So when did you decide that writing was going to be the next stressful thing that you tackled? You know, and was having a solid foundation with your channel something that played heavily into taking writing seriously?
Well, I started actually really getting into writing my story while I was living in Alabama. I was in Huntsville, which is a great town. And I really did love living there for a lot of reasons. And I had some friends that really encouraged me to like, hey, you're talking about these books, start putting pen to page, you know, walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk. And I had, you know, I'm like every fantasy fan. I had wondered about my own worlds and had little ideas of stories percolating. And so I really started taking the concepts that I've been building and putting out just rough outlines, ideas, sketches. And the end result was I realized, no, this is something I really want to get done. I mean, I have something to say, there's a purpose to the story, and I, whether or not people like it or not, I know it'll be an honest reflection of my take on the fantasy genre, and that's what I really want out in the world. And I also think that's a best approach to writing fantasy as well, especially if you're coming in from an angle where people are going to come with a high bar, which I got compared to Joe Abercrombie so much. I know I'm not writing on Joe Abercrombie's level. Like, why is that the bar for me? Everyone's like, his debut is not Wisdom of Crowd. Yeah, it's not. I'm going to admit to that. That's, I agree.
Please, Joe, hear me now.
Yeah. I realized I didn't, it's not about the critical praise. It's not about the commercial benefits. It's not about anything. It's about having a story you want to tell. And that made getting it out a lot less nerve-wracking, because I wasn't really thinking about the response. I was thinking about, is this telling the message I wanted to? Is this getting in a story I care about? And it does. So I'm happy with that. And that's where I wrote from in my pretentious writing chair.
I say, you know, you put it out there and you hope that people like it. And then, mm-hmm. you know, if they don't, you take the criticisms and you go, okay, what can I do to fix this? But continue telling the story that I want to tell, like not change what I want to do, but like tell it in a better way or a way that resonates more, I guess, with readers.
Yeah. And you asked what it's like to be on the other side. The craziest thing is how people view book success as black and white when it's a huge spectrum. Like, yeah, there's certain negative reviews out for my book and there's positive ones. I would say the review reception of my book was mixed, which is kind of what I expected. It's why I started the debut novella. I wanted that feedback to then step in with a full novel. And you get people who are like, it's a total bomb and it's terrible. And then I got another group of people who are mad at me because it's like, he made so much money and it's this thing, and he's cranking out another novel just because he wants more money. And I'm like, no, I'm putting out another book because I want to put out another book, and I didn't make as much as you think because it's a novella and most of that went to the printer. Moving on.
Right. Yeah. It's a really interesting community. I mean, there's a lot of love in the book community, and yeah, there's a lot that's not really nice. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, those people are like, aren't the audience you're targeting. Like those yeah. ones that are leaving those one stars that like, boo, whatever, boo hiss. You know, it's really you kind of want to look at the middle ratings, and yeah. you want to see like, what do they really enjoy? What do they not enjoy so much?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of gives you an idea of like what you can work on, I guess.
Well, I ignored the 5 stars because those are people, a lot of the, like, there were so many 5 and 1 stars left before the book came out. And I was like, I haven't sent out ARCs. What are you reviewing? Like, this is lies. And then I got one person who left a 3-star before the book was out. And I was like, at least the binary people make sense. They like or hate me. What are you like coming in? Like I medium you, I don't understand.
I have a love-hate relationship with you, but like, I'm not so bad that I'll leave you less than 3, but I'm not going to give you 4.
But that's why for, after my first book, Breach of Peace, is out, the reviewers I went to are the ones who had lots of criticism and some praise. And that was how I was able to come back with book 2 and really focus on what they talked about, because I found out the biggest problem I had was structure, where Breach of Peace was a novella that I thought told a story that I wanted to get out there. And in hindsight, it tells the prologue to Rebel's Creed. So now there's this novella that's the prologue to the second book. And I wish I'd put those together. It should have been one release, but honestly, on the same time, Rebel's Creed's better as a result, because I had it pretty much written when Breach of Peace came out, but then I got to take the criticism for Breach of Peace and tweak Rebel's Creed to get it up to par for where I knew it could be. And so it's this, like, it's, as I'm saying, it's not black and white. Like, it's not success, fail. It's approach, learn, approach again. And the only metric you can really go on is, did I improve off last time? Mm-hmm. And that's being an author 101, in my opinion, and getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really great take. I really like that. Very, very thoroughly thought through that. I really, really appreciate that. So, I have to ask, has the newness of the term author worn off yet?
No, I still don't think of myself as that. I had one of my friends tell someone I'm an author once, and I actually almost stopped and corrected them. And then I was like, oh, no, wait, no, book two's coming out soon. I am. But the best part is I asked them why they said that, and they said it's less complicated than saying you're a YouTuber. So I was like, that's very fair. I'm tired of explaining it. So I imagine they are too.
Yeah. You must say author's like, I know exactly what you do. YouTuber. Yeah. God, you could do anything. My brain can't handle it.
Well, I used to just say, before I got comfortable saying YouTuber, I wasn't comfortable with it at all. I used to say I was a video editor, because that's a very accurate description of what I do. Every YouTuber I know spends over 60% of their time editing their videos until they hire an editor, which I'm too stubborn to do. Yet I'm going to eventually. I have to. My wrist is dying. That's kind of the... It's a weird space to be in, because it comes with more baggage than the other field I've worked in, and I've worked in a few.
I gotcha. Tell me about a little bit about your writing craft. Like, when you first started, get up to your breach of peace, you get right outside of breach of peace, and now, you're going through book two. So how has your craft like changed since the beginning to now? Are you a gardener, or are you an architect, or have you figured it out yet?
I'm a panicker, is how I describe it.
New ones.
So for Breach of Peace, I very much so overthought the writing process. And at the end of the day, I think the book comes across more bland in terms of the authorial voice than I wanted it to, because I took every piece of advice. And that's a problem. Don't do that. Everyone who said, this is coming across a bit too quirky, this is coming across a bit too funny, this, and then I just took all that advice and Breach of Peace. I still love my book. I'm still very proud of it, but I wish I had kept a lot of the stuff I cut in, because you have to realize everyone's take is just their take. And if you take a massive amount of feedback, what you're going to do is you're going to end up with this polished nothing burger. It's not going to have those fun bumps and edges that make special stories. And that was probably one of my biggest mistakes. Is taking in all feedback. And actually, I had a conversation with my editor about how I push back more on book two, or my second editor. I now have two. So despite what I said, I actually have two editors now to go through and correct my dyslexic ass from making too many mistakes. And that's kind of the whole thing, is finding your voice is not about taking every bit of advice. It's about learning when to say, no, actually, that's just me.
I gotcha. Breach of Peace, your debut novella, which is the prequel to your Lawful Times series, mm-hmm. was released back in March of this year. And now, 7 months later, you're releasing the first novel in the series called Rebel's Creed. So first things first, hats off to you for simply just writing and finishing something, because let alone putting it out in the world, which can be scary. That scares me. I didn't have anything finished. But you've already surpassed like millions of people who've yet to even do so, which is quite an accomplishment in itself. So just
thank you.
Seriously, hats off to that. So before we begin talking about Creed, for those that are watching, can you give a brief overview of what Breach is about and how it ties into Rebel's Creed?
Yeah, so structurally, it's very much so like a prologue, which is why I'm kind of glad it's a very affordable book, because in hindsight, I'm not going to give it away for free, because I'd lose money on every copy, but I'm essentially giving away close to cost, because it's a prologue, essentially a sales pitch for Rebel's Creed, I'd say. And what you're following, and I actually like this as the structure of the story that it is it's basically like it's meant to feel like a car crash. The world isn't very well explored, and instead I focused on exploring this character's experience in essentially a 24-hour period. And it follows an inspector named Clyde, who is called to a crime scene where she's found a noble family completely butchered, horrifically mutilated, and evidence starts mounting that it might not be these rebels that are being blamed for it. It might be a government issue. And so their assumption is then, okay, there's a bad actor within our government, and we need to find out who this is. And it's a dangerous situation, because it's a newly formed empire, and what you have is power structures not thoroughly defined. If you look back in history, whenever new nations come about, it's kind of difficult to find where one jurisdiction ends and another begins, especially if you put a literal god into play, and that's who's ruling the society. And so the police are unsure what they can do to investigate these leads. And one of them decides to just go all in. And the end of the book is the consequences of their actions and the truth of the situation being unveiled. Rebel's Creed from there does a more in-depth exploration of the why everything happened in that book. It provides a lot of the background information. So I wanted the reader to leave Breach of Peace kind of going like, what? And then Rebel's Creed to kind of provide that nice soft landing into, oh, okay. And Rebel's Creed is actually broken up into two books essentially as well, because it was supposed to be three novellas at first, but I didn't want to do three novellas. I'd rather just have a novella and a book. It's a Murderbot approach. That's what Murderbot does. They have novels, novellas, and then they realized, oh, let's just do a book here. Eh, back to novellas. I love Murderbot, by the way, moving on. And so the first book kind of explores the why, and then the second book within Rebel's Creed explores the ramifications of everything that went down. And these books, I'm apparently continuing to grow in size because I'm going novella, novel, epic. The third book is going to be my attempt at a Way of Kings sized book. Wish me luck. I've done the first rough outline. And so we're going up on that exponential climb of just, here we have about 200 pages. Okay, now we have like 300-400. Now we're going to get into like the 800.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. Go ahead and send your editor's gift baskets.
I will.
So what made you want to write like a police procedural story? Because I mean, I know it's a fantasy story, but you know, it's a crime story.
Yeah. So I've been working on this story for a long time. And what had always fascinated me as a kid, I was very into police procedurals and stuff. And then as I got older, positions of power and facilities of power really started interesting me, and then revolution, what it takes to overthrow. And I don't ever think it's a bad thing to question power. I don't think it's a bad thing to go against the status quo, especially if you find out it's wrong. But I often find fantasy books to oversimplify the underdog struggle. And so you'll find these people who won a revolution, they fight, they accomplish the odds, and oh, look, a time of peace. And then some authors explore how, you know, rocky that time of peace can be, but what I really wanted to get into is the cost of blood to make any kind of headway in that situation, and just how much must be sacrificed to overthrow something that is so large. And then I decided to throw in an actual god leading the society, who's an unjust, unrighteous god. And then what you end up with is a story of people who, getting into mild spoilers, the Rebel's Creed is a very pessimistic one, and that's what's driving them. I don't want to get in further because of spoilers, but it's a group that knows they're not going to come out on top, so their approach to the problem is very different.
Mm-hmm. So I have to ask, so the character Smits, you said you kind of grew up on police procedurals. Does that have anything to do with Jimmy Smits? Because like, I grew up watching NYPD Blue.
Yes, you are the first person ever to point that out. And thank I want to say thank you.
As soon as I saw Smits, I was like, I swear to God, it's Jimmy Smits. I know it's going to be.
I grew up watching NYPD Blue a bit with my dad. And so it was just a little shout out to that.
There you go. And
what's really interesting is I have a not negative view on police individuals, but I have a very negative view on positions of authority. And so one of the driving instigators of conflict in this book is there is a cop who tries to do the right thing. And because of that, the institution they're a part of punishes them. Because I think if you put people in positions of power like that, the end result is going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And that's why this character tries to do right and is punished for their actions, because that's part of the whole oversimplifying thing I don't like. If you look at history, the people who have tried to break away from institutions and do something right, the institution has safeguards in place. There's a reason these things go so poorly for them. I mean, the most detestable example ever is during Nazi Germany. There were Nazi generals who tried to take out Hitler and take over, and that did not go well for them. They were murdered and killed, despite the fact that they're trying to take out the bad guy. Right. Institutions are hard to move. It's really difficult to actually implement change. It's extraordinary. We saw that in recent America, right? Changing things takes time and effort and a lot of work. And I wanted to really get into that. And that's why the book is kind of taking the most negative approach it can in Rebel's Creed.
I gotcha. So you've touched a little bit on Rebel's Creed, but can you give a simplified overview of what it's going to be about?
Sure. So if you've read Breach of Peace, there's a character, Chapman, whose motivations are deliberately left extremely vague. He just ends up being someone who is, I'll just getting into this, he's a part of the Rebels. And so there's this, and I think a lot of people told me they saw that coming, so I don't think it's that much of a spoiler to get into. And so it's actually going through the same stretch of time through his perspective and the why things happened the way they did, which originally actually was written into Breach of Peace, and then I pulled it out because I thought it actually read as a cleaner story to have it as two separate narratives. So you could actually read them probably in any order. You could read the first bit of Rebels Creed for a while, then you need to read Breach of Peace, and then you could read the rest of Rebels Creed. But you know, don't do that, just read them in publication order. And then after you get to the same ending of Breach of Peace, about a third of the way through Rebels Creed, it picks up from there with essentially an all new cast of characters who are the next generation taking up the cause. There's very few through lines aside from a villain who's actually going to continue to play a role. And it's basically them going through the wreckage of what was done to their precinct, because once this precinct realized, oh my God, like we're on the wrong side of history here, and they were essentially annihilated for their attempt to do right. This is the people coming in and being like, this is what really happened. And so there's like a ministry of truth, and like in any good fiction book, a ministry of blank is very bad. And you have a minister of truth who realizes that his brother was massacred, and the story doesn't line up with what he knows happened to his brother. And so then he's, oh no, and he starts working against this propaganda machine. And that's kind of, and I really wanted to get into what causes different people to rebel as well. Chapman has a long monologue in the book where he kind of explores what caused him to rebel, is vastly oversimplifying, boredom. Holden, because of trauma. Josh, that minister, because of what was taken from him. And then we have another character, Reki, who essentially decides, okay, I'm going to rebel because it's a calling and she's needed that. And if you look at what causes people to get involved with rebellions or movements and stuff, it's all kinds of different stuff. And what is the truth, though, is at the core of all of them is they know they're on the right side of history now. They know they're on the right side. And that's such a motivating factor. If you, you know, you find out that there's a Sauron. If we all woke up one day and were like, Sauron's in the White House, a lot of people would go, well, now I have something to really work against every day.
So it may be a really dumb question, but how excited, nervous, anxious, and or afraid are you with the Wheel of Time series premiere coming up soon?
I'm very excited. I was more shaky until that last trailer. That last trailer, they touched up a lot of the rough edges, and they included some stuff where I was like, oh, plus they gave me some beautiful little Trollocs, and I am in for it. And it looks like Narg is going to be in there. So for any big Wheel of Time fans, you know who Narg is? Hell yeah. And then I would say the only thing I'm really still nervous about is waiting week to week. That's going to be a problem for me.
I mean, at least it gives you time to kind of like process like each episode. Like you can like go back and rewatch it and be like, all right, what did I miss? You know? But yeah, I felt the same way. I felt like the first trailer was like definitely leaving more to be desired. Then I watched the new edition and I go, okay, yeah, I can see where they're going with this.
I would pay so much money to be able to ask the marketing team, were they really happy with what they were putting out, or were they kind of want to touch some stuff up some more? Was there a bit of pressure? Because there was definitely some stuff put out where I was like, it looks way better now. So was it just like, okay, let's get as much marketing done as we can, so let's get it out early? Like, what was the drive? Because I'm not mad. I'm actually really happy we got to see as much as we did. I'm grateful as a fan. I think their fan engagement with like putting out a puzzle by contacting different Wheel of Time content creators and giving them pieces to put together was the most next level new age marketing I have ever seen from a company. Seriously well done. But then they also had some really traditional old stuff, so it felt like there was almost two factions at play in their marketing. And me being my brain, I'm like, was there a war? Like, tell me about it.
Who chose sides?
Right. And which side was Jeff Bezos on?
Right. Yeah, he's too busy with his rocket ships. He doesn't care about what's going on. So last question I got for you, what are some books that you'd recommend, maybe even a hidden gem or two?
So you and I talked off camera that I always recommend now, Murderbot. You need to read Murderbot if you have not already, especially if you want to up those numbers for the number of books you read the year, because there are a bunch of novellas. So you can be like, I just read eight books this month. And you did. You sure did. I've been quite infamously, my audience now really enjoying One Piece. They bullied me into reading it. Now I love it. For me, one of the big things I've been pushing, someone who's on the verge of hitting a really, I think, next level once he's more discovered, but is certainly already a bit discovered, is actually, I have his book right here. Did I accidentally X it out? No, I didn't. Good. Where is it? Give me your dragon. Where's the big old chunky dragon? Where? John Gwynn's books. Where did I put my John Gwynn? John Gwynn. I'm looking for John Gwynn. Apparently someone borrowed his books. I don't know where they are now.
You're never getting that back.
Yeah. But John Gwynn, yeah, probably not. Especially because, oh, it was an arc. Oh, no. My arc is gone. Bad. Oops. But John Gwynn, he's writing some really great stuff that I think more people need to be aware of. It's great Viking-inspired fantasy that just, it's got that level of epic that you rarely find. And I also can't sing the praises of Fonda Lee's Greenbone Saga enough. If you want something that is the godfather of fantasy, there is nothing else that comes close to what this accomplishes. It's following a crime fantasy in a lightly fantasy crime family in a lightly fantasy setting.
Say that 5 times fast.
Yeah. And it is heartbreaking, brutal, honest, violent, intelligent, well-written, and action-packed. I can't pitch it more than that.
I say, yeah, if you need more of a kick in the tush to go read Shadow of the Gods, I mean, I think we have 10 reviews on our site of that book. Like, that's the most reviewed book on my blog.
Yeah.
Actually, I was lucky enough to get blurbed for it on the UK hardcover.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, John is like, he's like one of the, not only is he one of the best authors I know, but like one of the best people I know. He's just a genuine human being that is, I wish he was my dad.
He's such awesome. A cool guy. Yeah.
He really is.
And you can actually start with his newest book, Shadow of the God. I recommend Malice. It's a very good read. That's his actual first fantasy book, I think. Yeah. But then Shadow of the Gods, you can pick that up as well. And I think it's a bit stronger than Malice, in my own personal opinion. Picking up Greenbone Saga with Jade City is the first one, is just fantastic. And the second book, it's got the Empire or the Star Wars structure where the first book's really good, the second book is great, and then the third book, actually no, it breaks away from the Star Wars structure because the third book is even better, so yay.
So I have to ask, did you get the Illumicrate versions of the saga?
I don't mean to call out Illumicrate, but I was in contact with them to get it, and now it's just been like nothing's here, and I'm like, hello, could I get it? I'd really like it. I'd love it, please. I'm on pins and needles. I'll review it on the channel if I do get it, because I've amassed quite a cult of Greenbone fans through just pitching it to them endlessly. And I'm sorry, one more pitch, and this is for younger people, because the old heads in the crowd are going to go, everyone's read that, what are you talking about? But new fantasy fans haven't, and it drives me wild. Discworld, read it. If you're under 30 and you've not read Discworld, you're doing yourself a massive disservice. It's one of the top 4 fantasy series of all time, bar none, and it's a must read. Get into it.
Now, do you have a specific starting point? Do you start on book 1? Do you start later in the series? Because I mean, it's like
Guards or Mort. Guards or Mort.
Okay.
I think it's more than 30, but they're all so small. And you can get them very cheap in hardback. There's this wonderful company that puts out like all the books in hardback for $10 a pop. Oh, that's a great deal. And they have gorgeous art. They're like embossed, all this stuff. Definitely worth getting into.
Awesome. Well, Daniel, I just want to thank you again for coming on the channel and talking about Rebels Creed and then some. But I want to say thanks again to The Broken Binding for sponsoring today's chat. They're here to help any and all stranded readers find their next fantasy or science fiction fix. Head over to their website, which I'm going to have a link below, where you'll find hundreds of brand new and recent releases, several of which are signed, which is very nice, to get that TBR overflowing like it should be. And included in that catalog of books is Daniel's novel Rebels Creed, which will be a signed bookplate edition that would simply look fantastic on your shelf. So, Daniel, congrats again on the release of Rebels Creed. Best of luck with your 8 to 1,000 page next novel. I'm going to go ahead and say a prayer for your editors. And and just best of luck with everything you're doing, man. Just keep up the great work. And just thanks for all that you do for the fantasy community.
Oh, thanks. I actually, if you don't mind real quick, I'd love to plug this next week, or no, it should be Saturday. I'm going to start launching a new series where I do spotlights on indie releases coming out for the genre. So if people would like to check that out, it'd mean the world to me if that series did well, because I really want to help indie authors find their audiences.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll definitely make sure to plug that when it's out. So appreciate that, Daniel.
Thank you.